Ooh, he's so nasty.
Not really, guys, but I am so soft. At least my underwear are. Can you picture a world where putting on a new pair of underwear isn't just fresh, that you're actually stepping into a better day? Well, MeUndies focuses solely on producing the most comfortable underwear you've ever experienced. Ooh, he's so nasty. My friends at MeUndies sent me a few pairs a while back, and now I can't imagine wearing anything else. It really makes each day that much better. For the price of two cocktails, MeUndies will deliver your new favorite pair of underwear right to your doorstep. Better day guaranteed. Try them on, and if they aren't the most comfortable, best-feeling undies you've ever had, they'll refund you and let you keep your first pair for free. And for a limited time, everyone in my audience gets 20% off their first order. But you have to go to our special URL, MeUndies.com/Theo, T-H-E-O. That's MeUndies.com/Theo, T-H-E-O. Get your undies, get your junk right.
Ooh, he's so nasty.
All right. Welcome to Allegedly. I'm Theo Vaughn.
I'm Matthew Cole Weiss. Hey, guys. And today we have an interesting guest.
Yeah.
One of our more interesting, not our normal type of guests.
Right. But possibly, maybe, probably to me, super interesting.
Super really interesting. And maybe the scariest to me.
Scariest?
Yes. I'm intimidated because when I looked him up, or when they sent me his picture, he's like in front of a giant Hummer with like an Uzi. Or it's probably not a Hummer or an Uzi, but you're holding a scary gun, and you're in front of a scary car.
Look, if anybody's given a Hummer in front of a scary gun,
right? Okay,
it's Matt. So
enough. This is Rob Dick.
Rob Dick, thank you for joining us so much
today.
He
is a renowned bounty hunter, which is an interesting profession.
Yeah,
something we don't come across every day. And not only that, but you were bodyguard / I think just bodyguard during the Casey Anthony trial, which is something Theo has a personal fascination with.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm fascinated with that whole culture, you know, that whole televised culture anyway. I mean, obviously I don't know the real life of it. But yeah, I've watched so many of those shows. I literally cannot go to sleep at night unless I know that somebody really got murdered or if there's a buried treasure somewhere. Like, I cannot go to bed at night.
Fair enough.
And I feel like I'm most of America. That's a huge genre right now.
Of course. That stuff is still fascinating. Shows. And even like the Amanda Knox documentary that just came out on Netflix was still fascinating. And I think something about Casey would still be just as fascinating. So let's just dive into it, yeah? Before we get into any of the specifics, I wanted to know, are there any gay bounty hunters?
Actually, that's kind of funny because my ex-partner is gay.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
And not ex-partner that way.
Yeah, right. Gotcha. Ex-partner
Padilla,
in
is
business.
That Padilla? Were you guys
partner? No.
Did you
not
say
that one.
Madea?
No, Padilla. I think
Oh, Padilla, yeah.
Right, no, Leonard's not, but another guy is.
Really? Yeah. So is there like, I don't know, it just seems like a really tough business to be gay in.
Well, he doesn't.
It's not like
he's not like, hey, I'm gay and I'm coming to get you.
Right.
Right.
There is a funny story about that, but I don't know if this is the right place.
This is the right place for everything. This is all about
stories.
This is
always the right place.
Yeah. I'll tell you real quick. We went to hit this one house. The guy was in the garage, took off running back into the house. So, of course, we surround it and enter it. He actually had a gun and drugs, so he ran into the bathroom and threw the gun in the garbage can, tried to throw the drugs in the toilet, and pulled his pants down like he's just going to the bathroom. So the one guy that we're talking about happened to make it there first, got the one door open, and it was like a Jack and Jill bathroom, so there's two doors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he gets the one door open, grabs him off the toilet, gets him down on the ground. You know, he's armed. Of course, the guy has his pants down. Mm-hmm. When one of my other partners comes through the other door, just seeing it going, should I give you a minute? Or, you know, it was just...
That sounds like bounty hunters
thing,
the porn.
But, you know.
Yeah.
I've seen that porn situation happen.
Yeah, I think that's how a lot of porn start off.
Yeah, okay, interesting. So,
if you have the visual.
So in other words, like, I could do it if I wanted to, right? I could be a bounty hunter.
Yeah, I don't know if people would stop for you, though. I feel like if you'd be like, is so-and-so home? And they'd be like, no. Even
knock,
if it's
knock.
Them. And you'd be like, okay, I'll just come back later.
I would go based on like who I'm going to go after, based on the pictures of the people that you get.
Now, Rob, for our listeners, a bounty hunter does what? Like, explain the exact job of a bounty hunter, please.
As related to the bail system, which is what we're talking about usually, is in California, someone fails to appear in court. They're out on a bail bond. Let's say it's a $100,000 bond. The bail agent who bailed them out is then on the hook for that $100,000. If we don't return them back into custody or back into the court system within 6 months to a year, that bondsman would have to pay that $100,000.
Wow.
So we get paid anywhere from 10 to 50% of that to resolve that problem. So
wow.
He doesn't get stuck with it.
And it's all like legal stuff, or like can I've seen like Dog the Bounty Hunter or whatever, like can go to
Well, no, I'm just shaking my head with him.
That was one of my questions, is like, because that is the modern representation of bounty hunter these days. Is that an accurate
No, I mean that's more TV.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's unfortunate that is the representation of bail today, but
yeah.
In a way, yeah, some of the things are real. The fact is when someone bails out of court, bails out of jail, they're not out of custody. They're actually in the custody of who bailed them. And that's how it works.
And so
it's not a new process.
Do you guys pay and put up the money, or there's a middleman?
The bail agent would bail them out.
The bail agent does.
Okay.
And if the person skips, that's when you come in.
Right. So if Matt went to jail, mm-hmm. Theo went to a bondsman, mm-hmm. bailed him out, mm-hmm. technically, you're on the hook with the bondsman for whatever the bail amount is.
Right.
It would be a high bail because...
Yeah, when he doesn't go to court,
right.
Then that's when everybody worries because, you know, 6 months to a year, you're going to have to pay that.
Right.
So then they would hire somebody like me to go out, find you, and put you back into custody so that doesn't have to be paid.
So when I go to bail him out, how much do I owe? What percentage of, say, if his bail is $100,000, what percentage of that do I owe?
You're going to pay 10%.
So I'll put down 10 grand
mm-hmm.
and he's out. And then he asks, as long as he goes back to court, then I get my money back.
No. See, that's what people think. That's only if you put up the whole 100 grand at the court.
Cash
bail, you get all the money back. That 10% is the fee that's earned by the bondsman to basically
put up
loan the rest.
Wow.
So that's how it works.
Okay.
Huh. And so then if the bondsman gets worried about that 100, then they get you involved.
Correct.
Mm. Generally speaking, because I know you've done work in all states, right? What state is the best to go after someone, and what's the worst?
Probably Nevada's one of the best. They have the highest and strictest licensing. So there's a whole licensing process for recovery. You actually have to be licensed. There's a whole bunch of hurdles you have to jump through. I'm licensed in Nevada, and I think that makes it more of a real profession as opposed to like California, that's not a licensed state. It's just a training required. So basically you go to a class, get a certificate, and you be a bounty hunter.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. Ooh, I know what I'm doing this weekend.
Yeah, Jesus, yeah. Just picking up, probably picking up dudes, but in your spare time. You know.
Wow, okay. And so then how did you get involved in the Casey Anthony of it all?
Leonard Padilla had a way of finding unique cases and trying to kind of insert himself into it. Obviously, when we got involved in it, we had no idea that it would be that popular or even be that big as it turned out. I mean, even today, I still question why, you know, it had the world's fascination about it. I mean, there's lots of women that kill their kids out there, you know, and I do say kill their kid.
Yeah.
But, and so he thought that if he put up the bond, bailed her out by me having to, as part of the terms and conditions of bail, be around her 24/7 to make sure that obviously she didn't flee, harm herself. I mean, in cases like that, you also have a worry of the person maybe killing themselves, something like that. So it's kind of twofold. Make sure she doesn't get away, make sure she doesn't harm herself, things like that. And that also then allows us to be basically in the case around the family, hoping to maybe come up with something.
Like
evidence?
Like evidence, yeah. Like...
Yeah, I mean, what the world didn't know is that we always talk to somebody official. In this case, it was the FBI. Mm-hmm. They knew that, hey, if we had heard anything or if there was something that they needed to know, we'd come to them first. Hmm. We actually didn't even deal with Orange County Sheriff over there, which there was some issues with that,
yeah,
too,
yeah,
because
yeah.
obviously they didn't know what we were doing, and we didn't know what they were doing. So,
was that, did it feel anticlimactic after that case was over, like to go back to other cases, or was it refreshing? What was that like? Because that was such a high profile case.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been involved in something so crazy and don't know that I would want to be. I mean, right. It was just completely insane. I mean, there's just, I don't think there's anything I could think of that would relate to that. I mean, you know, a situation where at one point, you know, I'm standing in the front yard trying to keep 100 to 200 people from lynching her while somebody like Nancy Grace is doing a live show across the street.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just, it's like something you'd read in a book or something. It didn't seem real,
right?
You know, and just craziness.
Well, you said pretty adamantly killed her child, so you believe that that is what happened.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So were you, how come it didn't end up that way? What went wrong?
Well, there's a couple of theories out there. I'm not quite sure why, as far as, well, okay. One of the things that the problem with that case was is that, you know, it was in Florida. So Florida has the Sunshine Law, which everything is basically public information. So like when a cop writes a report and submits it to the DA, the newspaper could actually go get that report and put it in the paper. Mm. So I don't know how anybody gets convicted over there. I mean, it's not like that
right. Everywhere
else. So I think there was an issue that, you know, the world was watching one case and the jury was seeing something else. Mm. That's one of the things.
Did you, because you said you were in touch with the FBI, did you tell them at any point, like, I think she did it?
Well, I think everybody knew she did it.
Huh.
Were you shocked when the verdict was reached?
Yeah, it was more disbelief.
Yeah.
They had actually flown us out to New York while the jury was going into deliberation, and we were doing a bunch of shows talking about it up until the verdict, and I'll probably never forget that day of just watching that on the TV and just couldn't believe it. I mean, couldn't believe, you know, your first thought is, how could anybody vote that way? I mean, it was so obvious.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Baez did a lot of good, you know, smokescreen and pointing to George, you know, oh, George molested her, George is involved, and none of that was true.
So what is she like? I mean, aside from the obvious, what is she like when you're around her? And also, the other question, did you feel weird, like, protecting someone that you, in your mind, believed or knew that she was capable of this stuff, like, and you're protecting this person?
Well, in the beginning, it's kind of a weird situation. Like, we were actually getting death threats just going out there.
Mm.
You know, when it came out that we were going to bail her out and get her out of custody, and everybody was looking at us like we were crazy and,
right. You
know, what's wrong with us? You know, the first part of the philosophy is that it's not really our job to convict her in our minds or figure it out.
Right.
I mean, you know, bail's a business. It's a business of letting people fight their case and, you know, let the system decide or the jury decide it. So it's not a situation where we're going to make judgments right off. I mean, you know, there's crimes that come across in every bail of, you know, well, if that guy's guilty of that, I'd never be involved with that.
Yeah.
But it's not really that. It's just, you know, he's charged with this and we'll provide our service, get him out and make sure he goes to court. And then whatever happens, happens, that type of thing. So that was the first part, is going into it. But the first night getting her out when she got released from jail, again, you know, her plea at that time, if you go back to the timeline, you know, Kaylee had been missing for a month and then she was taken into custody and she was in custody for a month before she got out.
Mm-hmm.
So that night when she gets out, I'm driving her and Baez and Leonard was with us and we're going back and we're going back to the family, you know, Cindy and George, and we get in there and it's just kind of a surreal, weird thing of, you know, what should happen.
Mm.
You know, here's a mom in jail for the last 30 days, supposedly, you know, not knowing where her child is for 60 days now.
Wow.
And the first question, what would you think would be, you know, to the parents? Like,
where have you heard anything?
Yeah, have you heard anything? What's going on? Where are we at? And she was just completely happy, just excited to see her parents. And what's for dinner? Jail food sucks.
Wow.
And I mean, there's that moment right then where you're like, okay, we got a problem. It's not about getting out and helping find your child. There's definitely a problem right here.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Did you ever at any point think, I wish I or I could have done more if I had spoken louder or said something about my beliefs, or is there anything more I could have done that would have influenced the verdict in a different way?
No, we didn't really have any part of that.
Yeah.
You know, it was just more of trying to, like anything, when we go into something, we try to solve the puzzle. You know, I mean, it's the same thing in regular bounty hunting when we're trying to find the person. You have someone that doesn't want to be found, and we're putting the pieces together to find them.
Okay.
Was there times like where you guys would have like just conversations, just you and her? Because, I mean, that's a lot of time, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's where you really find out kind of the weirdness of her, you know. You know, the reason she never got on the stand is I think the world would have seen it.
Right.
You know, they didn't see enough of her to really get.
Yeah, I agree. It's hard to decide who she was a little bit.
Yeah, I think she would be a guy's worst nightmare. You know,
yeah.
I mean, you know, she'd be the funnest girl in the bar. You know, everything's happy. You're happy you met her, you know, having a good time. But man, don't close your eyes. You know, it's just, it's a weirdness. You know, I explain when somebody says, well, what's she like? I can give you a little explanation of how I guess I could kind of rationalize how I could explain it is that imagine a friend of yours coming over every day, you know, hanging out. You guys are just talking, hanging out, and she's saying, you know, your friend's going, oh, man, today sucks at work. You know, Bob in the next cubicle took my idea, took it to the boss, John. Now John's giving me all this work because, you know, my buddy over here, he took my idea, and I should be getting the points, but he's getting the points, and he got the raise or whatever it is, you know. So that goes on 6 months to a year, and, you know, you guys just have this relationship as friends, and you know, say a year goes by and you're like, so how's work? Any better? And it's like, yeah, a little bit, but you know, old ding dong in the cubicle next to me, you know, he's still the super worker, you know, and I still get all the crap work, you know, it's never ending and on and on. And after that year goes by, you realize that there was never a job, there was never a John, there was never anybody. It's just that fantasy world in their head, but it's normal to them.
Wow.
So to anybody else, that's kind of a shock of like, you know, they were saying, how is she such a good liar? How does she just be able to come up with something on the, and it's not. She lived this fantasy life that she could pull, like, out of a grab bag, all these things that in her life was real, but
totally
nobody
real.
Else's.
Yeah. Yeah, her perspective, it was totally clear. And
wow.
So it was really honest in her eyes almost.
Exactly. And that's why it was so, like, that one, the first day law enforcement was involved, you know, when they had got the car and Cindy went out and found her and brought her back to the house, and you know, they were starting to question her, and she gave up the she was kidnapped story. You know, the cops come and put yourself in this place. You know, Leonard used to joke about if she ever got off of this case, he was going to make her a bounty hunter. Because in bounty hunting world, we scam and we kind of lie to people and try to get to some place. You know, imagine this being her, where she tells the cops, you know, hey, I don't know, you know, my nanny took her. You know, I've been doing my own investigation for 30 days and I'm trying to find her and on. And, you know, maybe we could go to my work and, you know, there might be a clue there. She used to go to work with me all the time. So the cops take her across town over to Universal. She goes up to the security guard and the security guard goes, you know, well, where's your name badge? You're not on the list. And she's like, well, my daughter's missing. I got to get to my office and come up with clues to help find my daughter. And of course the cops are with her, so the security guard's like, well, okay, whatever, you know, lets her in. She goes all the way through the building, all the way down the hallway to the last possible place she can go, and then turns to the cops and goes, I don't work here.
Wow.
Good. I mean, who could do that?
Wow.
That's part sickness, part pathologically insane weirdness. That's wow.
Do you think that she could have killed someone else?
No, I don't think that she's like some serial killer or something that happened. I think it was a situation where, you know, you saw it in the video where she went off on her parents, you know, when she was still in custody.
Yeah.
I think it was, you know, a fit of rage. I think coupled with the fact that Kaylee was an inconvenience to her.
Right.
You know, she wanted to live her life. And I guess the saddest part to it is that, you know, George is a really good guy. You know, he was an ex-cop. I mean, he really got a bad run in this whole thing, both in the media and just everywhere on it. But him and Cindy would have taken that child and raised her as their own, you know, in a heartbeat. But I think to Casey, that would be a failure that she wouldn't accept, you know, and she would rather punish the family by making her go away and try to have her own life, you know, and that kind of philosophy. So there's some issues.
I'm assuming you don't talk to her or have any kind of relationship with her now.
No, the last contact I've had was I talked to George afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
But that
have
was
you stayed like abreast of what she's doing, or is that now it's just chapter closed in that part of your life and move on?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I don't really care what she's doing. I mean, you always got to feel that, you know, people like that will slip up again and do something, you know, and something will happen down the road.
What would you say to her if you ran into her now?
I would say that I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that she got off.
Do you think if she were in like a closed environment or there were some type of a moment, like, you know, say you guys were out on a smoker's porch or something, not saying, I don't even know if either one of you guys smoke butt or have, but like that she might admit to it?
Well, the scary part now is that, you know, with Double Jeopardy, she could come out now and actually tell the real story. The problem is you probably couldn't believe her.
Yeah.
Right. That's crazy. All right. Wow. I'm going to switch topics now. What? Let's say I'm on the lam. Where would be the best place for me to hide?
Probably in plain sight.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
So it would be easier for me to just be walking around than go like... Because you guys do so much research and you would know where I'd be, sort of thing?
Yeah, well, the harder people to find, not like we want to give clues to anybody.
That's true.
It's easier when people flee because think about it. You know, if you're where you're living, you have, you know, how many friends that you could hang out with. You could sleep on their couch. You could go here. You could go there. If you take off and go cross country, you've got nobody. So then you really stand out. So it's actually easier to find you when you leave.
I would assume, like, because my instinct is to get the hell out of Dodge, right? That's what I would do, but interesting.
And that's most people's mistake.
Yeah.
What's one of the most unique places you've found someone hiding?
Actually, probably the best one would be, and it was actually on TV that we did. We picked up the guy, the child molester in Guam.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what's so crazy about that is that, you know, if you know anything about Guam, it's a very small island.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the odds to go all the way out to that island in the middle of the Pacific? There's like five hotels on the whole island. And on the third floor, there's two people with exactly the same name in two different rooms.
Wow.
Hmm. I actually grabbed the wrong guy first because he looked more like the booking photo than the actual guy.
Wow, that's crazy.
That's crazy.
That gets pretty bad.
And is that like one of the best gets when you're getting somebody that you know is like involved in like stuff like that? Is that like, is there more of a semblance of like justification or anger there?
Yeah, personal justice getting like...
Well, again, you try to take the emotion out because, like I said, it'd get to you too much, you know, on the crimes. I think that one was just a really good gratification because in that instance, the mom was actually paying him, you know, giving him money to help him run.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously the parents never think their kid did anything. So she's helping him, which ended up getting him caught, but kind of made it harder, you know, because he went all the way to Guam. And
Do you have like one that haunts you, like one that got away maybe? Or that kind of...
Nobody gets away.
Dang, Rob Dick saying nobody gets away.
Damn, okay, I like that.
Is there like a demographic or a type of person, like a job or any... Who's most likely to be on your list of criminals that you're after? Is it mostly like kind of people that aren't making good choices? Just like, obviously none of them are making good choices, but is it like, you know, like, is it a deadbeat dad? Is it like a blue collar guy? Is it a white collar business worker? Is it like thugs? Is it like,
it's kind of a spectrum of things. I mean, you know, I think the biggest, common denominator is that just nobody wants to take care of it. You know what I mean? A person gets in trouble, maybe they know they're going to do time and they just don't want to, you know, don't want to until you have to, you know, you find me, that type of thing. And that's why like a lot of them don't leave. You know, some people are still working, you know, doing their thing. They just don't want to go take care of it.
Hmm.
And then we just have to make them do it because we're on a time limit.
Right. Have you ever had someone you were after try to pay you to get away?
Ooh.
Yeah, that's come up a couple times. And just because of, you know, we have to do the job, potentially. And it's not even about the, you know, is it a better deal or is there, oh, that would be more money or something. Yeah, that could just come back to bite you. I mean, because you can get arrested for, you know, extortion, something like that. I mean, because obviously that's not the same story he's going to tell him.
Right.
You know, so it's just not worth it.
You ever been chasing a hot chick and taking a few extra days just to kind of peek around the premises, boy?
I'll tell you, there's been a couple times where it's pretty bad putting those cuffs on, going, man, if it was a different circumstance, you know.
I was wondering that, if you get some of the booking photos and you're like, oh, this one, I'll take this case. You know, this one looks a little more interesting.
Well, we had to chase a stripper one time. Yeah. I mean, you know how long we had to sit in that strip club?
I bet, huh? You guys, she's right there, guys.
Wait, I can't see yet. Hang on.
Now, I've always said in my life that if I wasn't in entertainment, what I would want to do is work in criminal psychology and work with serial killers, which I have an odd fascination with. And I know you've worked with some, so to speak.
Well, I have a, I don't know if you'd call it a hobby or a big case, I think. I've been involved in this one case with two serial killers and potentially more to the group, but the two that were known and were charged with the crimes. They were convicted of two homicides,
wow,
but it's probably going to be more like 100.
They're still searching for the bodies, right?
Right. And I've been involved in it since 99. And through our efforts, we've recovered 6 bodies, including the two that they were convicted of, that they were actually convicted without a body.
And this is a hobby. This is something that you're kind of doing on your own.
Yeah, yeah, it started out as it was kind of a fascination. I mean, when I heard the story, I was involved with looking for the one missing, the one that he was charged with. Again, you know, being the bounty hunter, we find people that don't want to be found. So at the time, back in 99, I just didn't understand how somebody could vanish. I mean, we see it all the time now, but in 99, I was just like, it can't just vanish off the face of the earth. They got to be here somewhere. So I got involved with it, looking for her. Became close with the family, you know, her mom and dad and other sister, and just really good family. And the pain just did something to me, that closure.
Made you personally want to get
just wanted to do that closure. You know, and I think probably if I could take, you know, everything, I think one of my biggest successes in life is actually taking her dad to her body in 2012. Wow. You know, missing from 98, getting involved in 99, and then actually taking them to the spot where she was at in 2012.
Have you been in a room with these killers?
Yeah, the one guy in question, first off, I got so involved in it. Like I say, I went to all the trial with the families, saw other families, and basically where I got hooked on it was the facts that we knew at the time they were charged was that 2 18-year-old friends had killed 6 people without blinking an eye. And then fast forward from 85 all the way to 98, and that was their last victim. So my thing was, what happened in between that time? I mean, there's no way. I mean, serial killers, the only thing that stops them is death or incarceration.
Well, you were on a show on National Geographic, right? Mm-hmm. The Bounty Hunter show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing any more kind of reality stuff? Or...
Well, we've done actually like 17 shows total, but a lot of them were overseas.
Okay.
You know, places like France, they don't have guns or the bail system. So they love bounty hunters because it's like, I guess over there, they think we're still in the Wild West.
Yeah, you know? It's awesome.
Guns and chasing people down just like the Wild West.
Yeah, I like that.
So, but now, you know, I'm looking to do something on this one case, because like I said, it's for the closure of the families. Like I said, it's hard to explain. You know, I'm friends with probably over 100 families that potentially could be victims, and they're just some of them are emotional wrecks. You know, they can't function.
Just 100 families with a missing person.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And where do you, because I used to fantasize actually, or when I, not fantasize, but when I was growing up, I used to think sometimes that when I was driving along by the interstate, that there were probably a bunch of bodies like out in the woods and stuff, you know?
I thought that.
Because I used to pick up hitchhikers sometimes and drive them, and there was a couple of instances, one guy headbutted me one time and knocked me unconscious. Were just times where I could see like, oh, this could have really ended poorly, you know? Like, is there any, I guess there's no way to really just do like a mass walk where they can just start to try and figure out what's out there, can they?
No, and it, yeah, there's, you know, the FBI's got their serial killer task force that they're working on those, you know, like the truckers, because that was a big problem mm-hmm. with, you know, law enforcement. A lot of times, it's getting better today, but back then, you know, even say just 5-10 years ago, there was no communication between, you know, like the cities and the counties or wow. different counties. So if you had a missing person here and they went 4 counties or even to another state, you know, now it's just a body somewhere else. And if they do find a body, where's that body from? I mean, yeah. it becomes like a nightmare. And even with this case, these guys traveled all over the place. I mean, you know, one of the guys would tell me that, you know, their best time was summertime, you know, going to say a truck stop or the, you know, they call them the lot lizards, you know,
yeah,
they're working there and, you know, grab one of them and nobody's going to miss them. And so that made it easy for them. And it's kind of in a warped sense, like you were saying, that, you know, I find myself, you know, you're driving, you see somebody and you're like, oh yeah, that'd be the perfect victim for right. them, yeah. you know, and they don't even know it. Huh. You know?
Yeah, I was at the mall one day watching my sister's kid. My sister has 2 little girls, and I took one of them just to get, like, ice cream and ride on the Ferris wheel or the merry-go-round, right? And we're sitting there, and this man comes up, and she's probably about 4, and kind of, like, rubbed her hair. And he's like, oh, she's so pretty. And I didn't know who my sister knows in this area, so I'm just like, oh, this is a friend of their family, right? So I just started saying, oh, hey, how's everything, you know? And then he's like, yeah, she's such a beautiful girl. And he's like rubbing on her cheek. Mm. And that's when I realized, like, the look on her face, like, she has no clue who this man is. And, like, I got up and I was like, you need to fucking leave right now, right? But I wish in hindsight that I'd have, like, said something to someone or done yeah. something, you know? I just made sure that the guy walked out of the mall.
Let me ask.
Just a lot of the creeps out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you ever had any run-ins with Hollywood stuff? Hollywood people or people in the entertainment business? Or I would assume probably not.
No, not too much.
I assume if, like, Brad Pitt is doing something, they'll be able to find him pretty quick.
Yeah. No, nobody that's really big name. You know, if a big name person does, you know, bail out or something, yeah, they're pretty easy to find.
They're
one
pretty,
way or the other.
Yeah,
because,
completely.
Yeah.
And get.
Have you ever committed a crime?
Ooh.
No.
Just asking, bro. Just asking.
Okay, I'll give him a point on that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I'll take a. Oh, yeah, I'll take
you
that, man.
Theo, have you?
I feel like I've probably committed some crimes I haven't really thought of. I don't think anything.
Nothing that's like speeding or something, right?
Yeah, nothing super illegal. You okay. know, maybe driving high or something like that.
I'm sure, but he's allegedly committed a crime.
Yeah,
allegedly.
Yeah.
There
Everybody's
you go.
Allegedly.
So now, your name is your real name Rob Dick.
It is.
Now, did you ever consider porn with a name like that? Because that is a great porn name.
That's true, actually.
Isn't it? I mean, porn or bounty hunting?
Rob Dick, Lonnie Cock. That'd be a good one, too.
Well, and the funny part about it is that my actually born name is, my last name's Miller, Rob Miller. And when my mom married what I consider my dad, his name was Dick.
Okay.
And so I actually had him adopt me when I was like 7 and took his name, which, not thinking at that time at 7, where this would go.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, I became a cop at 18, and that was a great name tag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. It's kind of like, yeah. I see it like on a TV show, Rob Dick.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I mean, it's obviously, it's,
well,
definitely,
it's just usually your last name. Right. So, yeah. So I just had a name tag. It's a Dick, you know.
Did you
give somebody a ticket? They're like, well, your name certainly fits, you know. And, whatever. It's an attitude.
Have you ever, like, become so enthralled with a victim or somebody that you were looking for that you kind of romanticized it to the point where you thought, like, there could be, like, a love connection or something like that? Because I find that I'll do that with, like, celebrities or something. I'm like, oh, this person seems just like my type, you know, like, if I ever meet them. Has that ever happened? Like, is there any, like... Is this making any sense?
No,
a weird
not
question.
To me.
Like, if you ever think, like, oh, this person's missing, I hope they're alive, I feel like we'd be attracted to each other.
It's okay
thing?
If you say no, Rob.
I'm probably going to end up in hell somehow.
It's an odd question.
Do you think a lot of these serial killers are just, or a lot of these types of people are just infected with, like, a satanic type of thing that just can't be reformed? Do you feel like it's just a...
Yeah, I don't know that it can be reformed. I think there's a certain type of person out there, and I think in this case, they were, it was like a drug to them. You know, it was the thrill of it, because it wasn't, and what made it so hard on my end for trying to put the cases together was it wasn't just a, like, say, the I-5 strangler who just strangled women. Mm-hmm. These guys would do whatever. You know, if they came across two guys, they'd shoot them in the face with a shotgun and just leave them there. If it was a woman that they abducted, they might rape her and stab her 47 times. You know,
right.
I mean, so it's just, there was no rhyme or reason to it. It was more the excitement of that power trip of taking someone's life.
Do you get weird feelings, like, whenever you're just walking by somebody or something like that, because you've been so around this type of environment that you feel like, oh, there's something about that person? Do you ever get that?
Well, I don't trust many people. I always watch everybody. But the thing is that I think what I have found is, you know, when I go do a visit on death row with this guy, you know, we're sitting in a 5x5 cell. I mean, that's how you visit in death row. It's not like a jail where there's a window between you and you're talking on a phone. I mean, they just basically put you two in a cage and you just hang out for 2 hours. And during those conversations, most of the time it's like me and you talking right now.
Right.
You know, and when you walk away from that, it's like, man, there was nothing that jumped out. You know, this person's like an average person. You know, look at Bundy, who had a good charisma, you know, and that allowed him to get more victims, you know, and be that person that someone would trust and end up someplace they shouldn't.
That always broken arm of his. Gosh, didn't anybody think, wow, my neighbor breaks his arm every year?
Yeah.
Seriously. Are you single?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it hard to be in a relationship when you're a bounty hunter?
Oh, that's a good question.
It is. Yeah. Mostly your other half doesn't understand getting a phone call at 11 o'clock and having to jump up and run out the door and be gone the rest of the night, you know.
Yeah, that's the, or, I guess not.
Yeah.
Or some of the times when we're chasing somebody, you know, you don't know when it's going to end. You know, it's hard. You got somebody that says just whacked out on meth and they're up for 5 days and they're running hard, but you've got good leads and you're right on their heels.
Yeah.
Then you got to try to stay awake without using the meth and, you know, try to stay on it. So it,
you got
to
love that
situation.
There's got to be a part of you that thrives on that that chase aspect of it.
Yeah, I think anybody in this industry, that's, you know, that's the fun part about it. And it's like a big game of chess, and when you win, you know.
Yeah. And so now you're teaching classes, right?
Yeah, in California you have to take a 20-hour course to get into this. So that's what I teach.
So you're teaching that. Yeah. Is it are you trying to make a new generation of bounty hunters to take the throne, so to speak? Or,
well, I'll tell you, it's kind of a weird scenario that in law enforcement right now, it's called post peace officer standards and training, which is law enforcement training. And there is no formal post training in bail and bail recovery. So basically you've got law enforcement out there that has no idea what the rules are that we go by or what we do. And then, you know, their only input to that is either watching a show on TV or, you know, going to a call where four guys are running to a house with guns and they don't know what's going on, or that's a home invasion or what it is. So I think my goal in the teaching the class is to teach the people about the law, to make sure that our industry is protected with professional people and not somebody just watching a TV show, grabbing a gun and running out there.
Yeah.
You know?
So do you think that Hollywood kind of, it's not accurate portrayals a lot of the time?
Most of the time it's not.
Yeah.
Even like the reality sides of it, most of the time not.
Oh yeah, because most of the reality is scripted and it's, you know, it's just not.
Yeah, I mean, think about Dog the Bounty Hunter. First of all, how he's on an island. How hard is it for somebody to get away, you know?
That was always the big joke.
Like basically water.
His biggest enemy is water.
Oh, yeah, dude. And his little blonde brisket of a wife, that little grenade. And then Leland, he always has his kids doing all the work. He's just yelling at him in the distance. He has on 9 walkie-talkies.
See, but that's what you know. You know him. That's the representation of bounty hunting that I know. Or I think of like Midnight Run. Or like movies about bounty hunters or different. There was a movie called Bounty Hunter with Jennifer Aniston or something and Gerard Butler. Which I'm assuming that's not what real life is like.
Most of the time, no.
Was there ever a time whenever you were on the Casey Anthony watch where there was like any sort of romantic connection where like you felt like she was because if a woman like that's kind of all over the place, I've dated some girls like that or been around them where you're like, well, those nights you just almost have to keep watch on yourself a little bit, you know?
Well, what a lot of people didn't realize is I always had a female hidden in the car with us.
Oh, wow.
Whenever I transported, because I knew better than to be alone with her, because that's the, I guess, the appeal to her is that she's always flirtatious. You know, she flirts with everybody. I mean, we used to play this little game in the mirror when we're driving. I'm looking in the rear view at her, you know, and she's talking into the mirror, you know, mm-hmm. doing her little looks. And it's just like a surreal thing of, you know, like one time we were going to the attorneys because we were always either going to the attorneys or over to court or to home confinement for ankle monitor. And, you know, she said, she had these white glasses, these sunglasses, and she goes, "Don't I look like Jackie O? How many newspaper or how many cameras are out there today?" You know, because that's what she was feeding off of, was right. that excitement and that, you know, she has to be the spotlight in the room.
Right.
You know, one of the things, like in the family, she was, Cindy was showing a bunch of pictures of Kaylee in the pictures, and it was kind of an awkward thing that she had to go get her pictures and like, well, but look at me here. Look when I was little, you know, cause oh yeah, Kaylee's getting too much attention, you know, and that's the way she is.
Wow. Yes. She was just, something was wrong with her. She just didn't get enough attention, or she didn't perceive that she did something.
Yeah. It was something about that. Cause she always, you know, if you look at her in a nutshell, it was easy to explain of, you know, I said in the beginning, you always have to worry about, is someone like this going to kill herself? You know, mm-hmm. 5 seconds around her, you know, she's never going to kill herself. You know, she loves herself too much. She's not going to do that.
And you know, when we started the podcast, the first guest you wanted, you've always wanted to get Casey Anthony on here because I know you found it fascinating. And she's, I wouldn't want to be near her. I would be afraid what I would do because I'm convinced that she did it as well.
Yeah, it'd just be bizarre.
It's just interesting. Yeah. Well, okay.
I'm all ready for my 30-second pitch. Are you, Matt?
Yeah, I'm ready for the 30-second pitch. And by the way, how can people go to your class?
Usually it's on the website, www.beaclass.com.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Stands for Bail Education Association, but that's too long to type out.
Right.
BEAclass.com. BEAclass.com.
Okay.
Pretty much, yeah.
Do some weirdos come to the classes? I would assume
yeah,
you might get some weirdos.
Wyatt Earp. You get some Wyatt Earp.
You get the whole spectrum. You know, people watch some TV and, oh, I want to be a bounty hunter.
Right, exactly. I can imagine that.
Yeah.
Are there people, because I know like in show business, there are people who want to be actors and you just kind of look at them and you're like, it's not going to happen. Do you ever look at people and just in your mind go, this isn't going to happen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The truth. Hey, what's up? Do I sound naked? Well, I'm not, dude. I'm wearing me undies. Think about it. Underwear. The first thing you put on and the last thing you take off every day. So why would you settle for anything less than the best feeling underwear on the planet? Huh, Matt?
Oh, no, you wouldn't. That's why you gotta get me undies.
Me undies focuses solely on producing the most comfortable underwear you've ever experienced. Try them on, and if they aren't the most comfortable, best-feeling undies you've ever had, they'll refund you and let you keep your first pair for free. How does that sound,
Matt? That sounds amazing. Where do I go? How do I do this?
Oh, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you how these uber-cozy undies are sold exclusively on the Me Undies website, where you'll enjoy free shipping in the U.S. and Canada. Do you know where Canada is?
It's up there.
It is. And for a limited time, everyone in our audience gets 20% off their first order. But you have to go to our special URL, meundies.com/Theo, T-H-E-O. That's meundies.com/Theo. Ooh, he's so nasty. Right. I got 30 seconds. Mr. Dick, I feel like I am the kind of guy who loves to catch criminals. Like, I feel like if I saw a criminal, I would know it immediately. I'd be like, oh, here's a criminal. I remember being young when I was in the woods and we found like part of a foot or something and we turned it over to the police and they put it in a bag. That's all I remember. Some guy literally put it in like a AMP grocery store or Winn-Dixie bag.
Good job.
And I'm just saying that I'm a good Samaritan and I would never do any harm. And if you ever were looking for me, I would just stand right there so you could find me.
That's an interesting tactic to take. All right, I'm going to take a different tactic. Mr. Dick, I believe that my line of questioning was both delving and also interesting, whether it's the gay bounty hunter question or the romantic question with being in a relationship, to see a different side of it other than just the informational stuff, which was the Casey Anthony stuff and stuff that I thought was fascinating, and I still do. But I wanted to get to know you as a person and what it's like to really be a bounty hunter.
It's a good take.
So you can go by your points, or you can go by the feeling you have right now in your heart, and tell us who is going to win this episode.
Well, you got one more point on that, Matt. But you lost one when you made me move.
So.
I got to give it to Theo by one. By one.
So close.
Wow.
That's fair. Matt won last time.
Well, in all fairness, if you were after me, I'd be running. I wouldn't stand in plain sight like he's saying. I'd be gone.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. What's the number one key of a great bounty hunter? Like, what's one of the number one rules?
Just being able to think on your feet, being able to analyze something and try to predict which way it might go to make the apprehension as safe as possible for everyone out there.
Yeah, if you need a bounty hunter, if you murdered someone and have a few questions, or if you just, you know, you need a place to hide out and just want some pointers, if you're playing hide and go seek and you can afford to get a good consultant.
Mr. Rob Dick.
Mr. Rob Dick, man, we thank you for spending time with us today, man.
Yeah, really thank interesting. You. Very enlightening.
Yep, I won. So I get to close us out here.
All right,
Matthew, thank you very much. Rob Dick, thank you very much.